I'm Alan Hall, president of WeatherGuard Lightning Tech, and I'm here with the founder and CEO of Intelstore, Phil Totaro, and the chief commercial officer of WeatherGuard, Joel Saxham. And this is your newsflash. Newsflash is brought to you by our friends at Intelstore. If you need actionable information about renewable projects or technologies, check out Intelstore at intelstore.com. Masdar has signed an agreement to acquire a 50% stake in Terragen Power Holdings from Energy Capital Partners, who will exit its position. Terragen operates approximately 2.4 gigawatts of wind and solar and 5.1 gigawatts of energy storage facilities across 32 U.S. sites, mainly in California and Texas. The transaction is expected to close by the end of 2024, while Igneo Infrastructure Partners will retain its existing 50% stake in the company. So, Phil, this is crazy because Masdar is making big plays in Europe and now the United States. This is an impressive investment.
Yeah, and we've talked in recent episodes about the fact that Masdar has been making moves. Back at COP28, they had publicly announced they were going to spend something like $100 billion in the next, 5 or 10 years or something on projects in, I think it was like 42 different countries. This one's interesting because of the energy storage play. Energy storage not only has huge growth prospects in the United States, but a company that is as financially focused as Masdar is, they want to get in on energy storage projects because it gives them the opportunity to do hedging and energy trading. This is exploding globally. And certainly if you're in ERCOT and you've got energy storage, you are making bank right now. And California as well, there's all kinds of markets where, especially if you can time shift power delivery away from negative pricing, which again, you see sometimes in ERCOT or in CAISO, this is a big opportunity for them. So I like this deal.
New article from Reuters discussing the valuation of RWE. And if you've been following RWE lately, it has dropped 25% this year, its stock price has, as it tries to transition to more renewable power generation. CEO Marcus Kreber faces three main challenges, according to the article: depressed electricity prices due to low gas prices, falling green valuations due to rising interest rates, and the company's legacy assets in coal. And I've been watching RWE the last several weeks. Even though they're making massive investments in renewable energy, they don't seem to be getting any credit for it from the stock market.
Yeah, it's interesting because we talk about RWE doing big things all the time, right? They're always kind of making some moves. I'm over here at Bilbao. They had a big sign on their side of their booth: 65 gigawatts of clean generation by 2030 is a goal. That's massive, right? Those are huge numbers, 65 gigawatts. So to me, when you brought this up and said, yeah, actually, RWE stock price is not doing that well, that was very surprising to me. I don't see why they're not getting the love from the markets, to be honest with you. And so if you are looking at some of these commodity prices just depressing that overall market, then I wouldn't think you would see RWE's stock falling without all of the other operators doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, although their exposure to coal is still obviously problematic, and that is probably the biggest drain at the moment. I think the reason that they also don't get as much credit for renewables projects is because of the limited amount of profitability that we've seen even for independent power producers in the market. We've seen prices kind of come back up in the past 2-3 years, equipment prices, power generation equipment prices, wind turbines, solar panels, etc. And so as a result, you're seeing thinner margins from the independent power producers. More of that available margin, assuming that electricity prices that are charged to end consumers aren't rising all that much, you're seeing, more margin being taken away from the independent power producers and being given to some of the, OEM companies.
The big numbers here to look at is some of the things they're stating in this article is the company reducing its CO2 emissions by 27% in fiscal year 2023 and increasing its overall renewable electricity production by 27%. So they are, while they do have the legacy coal issues, they are moving strongly in the direction of a more renewable portfolio.
Global Wind Service has announced a three-year agreement with RWE to support the company's new offshore efforts in the UK and German waters. As part of this agreement, RWE is changing its strategy from a site-by-site servicing model to a fleet-wide servicing model. Now, Phil, you start to see this more and more in Europe, and the United States is transitioning this way. When an operator hires a company to do maintenance, it is becoming more of an area or a fleet-wide contracts than the one-off farm-by-farm approach.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that it's being done more frequently with independent service providers is also noteworthy because normally, you know, especially in Europe, an OEM gets a long-term service contract, even on offshore. But RWE's got some of the most experienced people in terms of services and operations. So they know how to, you know, run their project sites. They do want somebody like Global Wind Service, though, to be able to come in and handle things at scale. And so that's clearly what was driving that that deal.
Well, it's a win-win, right? So right now we know it's hard to get good technicians. So this gives Global Wind Service the ability to get technicians, know they have backlog for them, know they have work coming up. If they're not working specifically on this one wind farm as a, you know, a capital improvement project, whatever it may be, they've got work on all these other wind farms going on. So from a manning perspective, it makes absolute sense for RWE and for Global Wind Service. The other side of it too is vessel use, right? So if you can optimize one thing out there offshore, it's the time that you spend in the vessel and what it's used for. So if you spend, if you're just going farm to shore, one wind farm to shore, one wind farm to shore, that's not an efficient use of the time and money with vessel. Now you're bouncing around from wind farm to wind farm, staying out there on SOVs. So you're a little bit more efficient there as well. So not only are you, you know, building that core group of technicians and having them out there and available, but you're doing it in a more efficient way.
Maersk Supply Service has partnered with Edison Schwest Offshore to accelerate the installation of offshore wind farms in the U.S. The partnership involves the construction of a purpose-built wind farm feeder spread, including two tugs and two barges to be delivered in 2026. The new feeder spread will transport wind turbine components or foundations to the installation site, potentially increasing installation efficiency by almost 30%. The partnership aims to increase logistical access to more U.S. ports and reduce installation time for the wind farms. Joel, Edison Schwest, obviously a big player in the United States, and Maersk, a world player in shipping. This seems like a match made in heaven.
Yeah, Edison Schwest has a ton of experience. If in the Gulf of Mexico, all oil and gas things, Edison Schwest vessels are out there all the time. They're beautiful, blue and white. They're always out working. So you would expect, I actually expected, to be honest with you, Maersk to enter this market earlier. As we saw ESVAGT come in, partner up with Crowley, like that was a good tie-up as well. So I kind of thought Maersk would jump in earlier, but Edison Schwest is the perfect group for them. Edison Schwest as well right now, they're actually building a brand new SOV, I believe, for Ørsted at this time in their one of their Louisiana shipyards as well. So they're doing quite a lot.
The good news about this, I guess, is that it's providing the U.S. more Jones Act compliant vessels, which obviously we need in order to accelerate the market. The challenge is that, you know, with the pace that the government, state or federal, wants to get projects going now, we're still not going to have enough vessels to be able to handle the capacity that we're going to need. So again, this is a great step in the right direction, but we need to move a lot faster on, you know, U.S. domesticated vessels if we really want to fully capitalize on the U.S. offshore wind market.